Hello, and welcome to Misspoken, a Lady Live Lit show featuring performers who are writers and comedians, actors and bloggers, exploring a new theme each month. This is Rosamund Lannan, and I host the show with Jasmine Davila. The following is a recording of our March 27th, 2019 show at the Gallery Cabaret. This month's theme was Blue Balls, featuring Jillian Ebanks, Jess White, and Lindsay Ennett. Tune in for our next show, recorded on April 24th. The theme is Petty. For more information, you can find us at miss-spoken.com.
Hello. Good evening. Hi.
Welcome to Misspoken. We're a Lady Live Lit show featuring personal essays by female-identifying and non-binary writers. We are your hosts, Jasmine Davila and Rosamund Lannan.
Hello. You can usually find us here at the Gallery Cabaret on the last Wednesday of the month. With each show, we take on a new and exciting theme. And this month's theme is
Blue Balls.
All right, let's get these frustrations started. Jillian Ebanks is a local Chicago comic originally from New Jersey. She's the co-creator and co-producer of the variety show Babs Comedy. You can catch her performing stand-up throughout the city. Follow her on Instagram at curlyhairnocare for random thoughts and pictures with hella filters. Give it up for Jillian!
I do. I love my Instagram filters. Oh, man. Thank you guys for being here. I perform a lot all over the city, and I recently had a performance in Hyde Park. And so I live north, so I finished my show. I caught a lift because that's what I do with my life. But I was feeling myself, and I caught a regular lift and not a lift line, and that is important. So I get in my lift, and I immediately notice that my driver is very attractive, but I'm actually very shy, which I recognize that I'm doing stand-up, but when it comes to, like, male interactions, I become a child. So I'm just, like, sitting in the backseat, like, and we're chit-chatting, and he's just, like, asking me about my night, I'm telling him I perform, and yada, yada, yada. And he says the words, "Would you like the aux cord to me?" Which immediately I was wet. I was like, "What would I like? You're going to let me play music?" Yes. So I'm playing music in his car. We're chit-chatting about artists. And we eventually get to my house after, you know, driving up Lakeshore. And I'm like, "You, Jillian, like, this is your moment. Like, because you have an attractive guy. Like, he has a car. He has a job. Like, hello, checking off boxes." But I'm shy, so I just go in the house, and I know, and I, you know, the app sends you the notification as soon as you get in, and it's like, you know, leave a review, and I'm like, this is my moment. So I anonymously leave the review. You know, "Lyft ride was great, he could be bae," which, like, in hindsight made no sense because, like, it was anonymous. So, like, there's no way, like, it's like you can't shoot your shot anonymously, you know what I mean? But I go to bed, whatever. The next day, I get a text message from an unknown number. This is a true story. And it's like, "Hey, good morning, Jillian." And I'm like, "Oh, like, hot, like, new phone." "Who's this?" I put, like, the bushes in the looking of eyes. And he's like, "It's your Lyft driver from yesterday. I thought I would reach out since I could be bae." And I was like, "Oh, my God." And I was like, "Oh, I did say this." So I calmly got myself back together, and I texted him back, "How did you get my number?" Because how did he get my number? It was super creepy because I don't know when men are hitting on me, so naturally I ruined the moment. And he was like, "Well, normally the comments are anonymous, but I work for Lyft Corporate. So I have access." He's like, "I'm a recruiter. I just actually do Lyft on the side." And I was like, "Oh, so you can see my full account." He's like, "Yeah, like, you know." And I was like, "Oh, okay. cool. There's no reason for me to go to Target three times this week. I just kept forgetting things. Like, I started suddenly judging myself. Like, can he see where I, like, does he see that I left this place at 1 a.m.? I don't know why I was leaving Mother's at 1 a.m. Anyways, so he ends up asking me out, and I'm like, okay, do I want to go out with this man who drives Lyft and has my number and knows where I go and has my address because he dropped me home? Yes, I do, because he's my soulmate. So we go out for this date, and we meet at a bar, and we're just chit-chatting, and then he, you know, the date comes to an end, and he's like, would you like a ride home? And I'm like, sure, because you know where I live, like, and it's free, you know, why call a ride when you'll give me one? So we're in his car in front of my apartment, you know, we're like making out and things like that, and he whispers in my ear, you know, I'll fuck the shit out of you, right? Which I feel like in this climate, I need to explain the fact it wasn't aggressive, it was very like kind, you know, it was like if you would like this service, I too provide this for you. You know, I didn't feel threatened. I was just like, huh. But like, I wasn't prepared. Like, cause this is not, remember, this is the same day. Like, this is like the next morning. I, you know, like my vagina wasn't ready. My apartment wasn't ready. Like none of, like I also was not trying to lose my virginity in his car because like, essentially that's his cubicle at work. And I just couldn't be deflowered in his car. So I went in my house and we texted for a little bit. Nothing came of that. I'm still very sad. I take lifts a lot in hopes that he would. But I was a virgin. This happened in the fall and I am no longer one, but we can get to that later. But I was a virgin until I was 28, which is like seeing a unicorn for the first time, I know. But I mean, I had blue vagina, like, okay, you want to talk about, like, I don't even think blue balls is real, because like I was struggling. But it's really interesting because a lot of people have like a lot of misconceptions about me because of it. People used to think I was really religious, and they would start quoting Bible verses, and I was like, hi, I've never read the Bible, please do not spoil it for me. I am waiting for, you know, the Netflix Bible series, because it's coming and I'm gonna watch all of it, okay? I was gonna say all blank chapters, and then I was like, I don't even think the Bible has chapters. I also don't know how many chapters. Anyways, I'm showing my satanic side. But yeah, so people are weird, or people will be like, you know, I think it's really beautiful you're saving yourself for marriage, and I'm always like, I don't believe in the social construct of marriage. Please stop. But really, I used to just get a lot of anxiety around dating, and so I just never did it, and so then I just never allowed that interaction to happen. But it's weird. Like, I moved here from New Jersey, and I had to get a gynecologist. And so, you know, you go to the gynecologist, and they ask you all these questions the first time you go. And so she would be like, when did you become sexually active? And I'd be like, I'm not. You know? Like, and she's like, oh, no. Like, you know? Yeah, like, and, you know, I'm in my mid-20s, so they're like, oh, if you took a vow of abstinence, that's cool, you know, like, that's, but we need to know. And I'm like, no, there's no vow, I just am, like. And she's just like, you know, I want you to know oral and anal sex count. And I'm like, I know, I went to school, I know. So finally she believes me, but you know, they still have to like do a pap smear and do like a gynecological exam, because like cervical cancer is a thing, you know, endometriosis, hello. And it's just so funny, I remember the first time I went to the gynecologist out here, she was like, you like, for the guys who don't know, like, our legs are up on a stirrup and they put an asculum in you and it's like pressure, and she's like, I'm gonna put some extra lube because this might be a lot more pressure than you're used to. And I was like, hey, let's just be clear. Just because dicks aren't up there doesn't mean fingers, tongues, vibrators are up there, okay? I am fun. I'm just not that fun, okay? No, but it was hard. It's hard. It's like weird, like never have I ever. I fucking hate that game. Like, when people ask to play that game, I'm the girl in the corner just drinking. Like, doesn't matter what's being said. So people are like, you know, I can't even tell if she's having sex. I'm more concerned with her alcoholism. I'm like, yes. But I did recently lose my virginity. I had an amazing Black History Month. I made some Black history of my own. And it's weird. It's really weird because, like, I've been doing stand-up about this for so long that I feel like I have to tell everyone, because so many people, like just so many friends and family and people in the community know just from like watching my work, and I just like want to tell everyone, but also like I don't, because it's like super weird. Like I don't want people asking me questions. I also feel like I've lost my edge a little, because like... Like, I am like, it was just part of my shtick. I used to be like, I'm anxious, I don't have sex. And now I'm like, I'm still anxious and I have to work on myself. Great. maybe there's something wrong with me. I am really excited to go to the gynecologist now. I want to get on birth control, so I made an appointment. But I'm like so stoked, because me and the gyno can have so much fun now. Like, we have so much stuff to talk about. Like, you know, I want all of the tests, because before it was a routine. Now I'm like, I want a pregnancy test, I want an STD test. Am I using protection? Yes. But you know, you never know. I just want the ability to ask for those things and not feel like silly, you know what I mean? I didn't tell the person who I slept with I was a virgin, and that was funny because they were super curious throughout that whole experience, and I was trying to play off like it was less pressure than it was, and I was like, oh, I have had 3 vibrators, but you know, this is just different. Like, these are the thoughts in my head that I was like, you know, and you, when you've been sexually frustrated for that long, you're like, think it's gonna be like, ah, but it's just the most awkward experience, and I don't feel like anyone accurately prepared me for how awkward it was. So I was just like, it, like, just like, this is like, just like being super awkward, and it wasn't enjoyable. So then the next time we had sex, I told him so that I could enjoy myself, and I transferred all that anxiety to him. And then he was stuck there worrying, like, are you okay, are you fine, is this fine? And I was like, no, I'm great. I am great now. So the moral of the story is, lose your virginity, don't tell them, and then transfer all of that emotion to them so that you can now enjoy yourself and they're the one who's anxious, because that's what I did. But you know what? It's been great. I've been fucking, and I feel like the last 28 years weren't even a waste, because I got some good stand-up from it. Thank you, guys.
I can't get this back in here.
Okay, good, because it's not going back in there. That's what you should, never mind.
Thank you. All right, our next reader, Lindsay Ennett. Did I get that right? Yay. Lindsay Ennett can be seen reading around Chicago at shows like Outspoken, You're Being Ridiculous, Story Jam, and this one. She has a weakness for reality competition shows and cries an average of 4 times during every episode of American Ninja Warrior. She is the host of I'll Be There For You, a bi-weekly podcast about pop culture and coping. Lindsay? Or you can hold it too.
What's up, everybody? This isn't about fucking, but it is about a time when I was super excited for something, and it was kind of anticlimactic, so... The 1996 Tony Award-winning play The Last Night of Ballyhoo opens on an idyllic scene of a well-to-do Southern family decorating the Christmas tree in their living room, their daughter gleefully singing the first Noel in an affected drawl. She prepares to put the star on the tree and is stopped by her parents and aunt, for you see, Jewish Christmas trees don't have stars. I always had the slightest sense that Christmas was something that was off limits for me. At a social justice training I attended, we were asked, what was the first message you received about your culture? Without even thinking, I said, it was learning that all the Christmas hype wasn't for us. That message was reinforced in religious education, where we were reminded that Hanukkah was a minor holiday, a hanger-on with an inflated sense of self due to proximity to Christmas. The Rita Ora of the Jewish calendar. If Hanukkah was a consolation prize, though, it meant that latkes were a consolation prize, and I like to eat my feelings. I identified with the family in The Last Night of Ballyhoo because I, too, grew up in a Jewish family that loves Christmas. My dual holiday celebrating aunt and uncle included my brother and I in most of the tree decorating and such festivities. At the end of Christmas Eve dinner, our parents would pile our sleepy selves into the back seat of the car and drive to Saguenay to look at the awe-inspiring holiday Vegas of lights. My grandmother, a synagogue cantor, led the Christmas Eve caroling at her Florida condo every year until she passed. And she even knew all the words to Good King Wenceslas. No stopping at Rudolph or Silent Night for Grandma Alma. She was no Yuletide poseur. She knew the deep cuts. As we grew older, all suspicion that my family's Christmas-related enthusiasm was just a ploy to make us kids feel more included melted away. I'd come home from school to Thanksgiving, and the light jazz station, which turned into Christmas music in November, you know, the one, would be blaring. For a few years, after my brother and I left for college, my mother began decorating a fake tree, a bendy thing enrobed in purple and white ornaments, Northwestern colors, that sat in our living room. And then I met my girlfriend, who is now my wife, and her Southside Irish Catholic family, and I no longer had to hide my giddy enthusiasm about Christmas. I could participate in the holiday and not feel like I was out of place. I'd get invited to pick out a tree with them and feel the cold southern Michigan air lap at my face. In fact, I'd hope my knowledge of deep-cut hymns would impress her parents. My wife does not half-ass things. I tell her it's her Capricorn nature, but she says that astrology is nonsense, which is exactly what a Capricorn would say. She will not go to a grocery store without a detailed list. If she makes any kind of significant purchase, she spends hours poring through product reviews on Amazon and Sweet Home and Wirecutter and Consumer Reports. She is the only 30-year-old I know with a subscription to Consumer Reports. I texted her the morning our favorite soccer team's home schedule for 2018 was released, and by the time I got back from my lunch break, I had a spreadsheet with a meticulously organized color-coded themed tailgate schedule in my inbox. Girl lives for spreadsheets. So naturally, for our first Christmas together as marrieds, Una insisted that we would have a real tree. Guests for holiday dinners would marvel at our immaculate decorating. We bought ornaments and decor with great thought to aesthetics, as well as to what ornaments would tell our story as a couple. We even found an ornament that was just a mini flannel shirt, because lesbians. We dreamed of the possibilities. Passersby on Pulaski would be entranced by its warming glow from our second floor window. It'd all be like a Thomas Kincaid scene, but, you know, gayer. This, in theory, was a great idea. We strolled around the lot by our apartment until we found our perfect tree, a 7.5-foot Fraser fir with ample sturdy branches. With the help of the nice man running the lot, we affixed it to the roof of Una's ancient Honda Civic and headed home. Of course, the thing we learned very quickly about being in possession of a 7.5-foot Christmas tree is once you leave the lot, you're on your own with the whole getting it up the stairs and inside and getting it up downstairs and back outside thing. Here is a step-by-step breakdown of what happens when my wife and I try to move literally anything that is a two-person job, including a Christmas tree. 1, we come up with a game plan. 2, we follow 0 of that game plan. This is usually my fault. 3, I lift with my back instead of my knees. 4, she shouts sharp drill sergeant directions at me in an effort to be clear and efficient. I am not very good at responding. 5, so instead I just yell pivot, pivot, in a jokey reference to that one episode of Friends with the couch, and watch the veins slowly rise to the surface of her neck. 6, she drops the thing, reassesses, and we start over, but this time with more tension and resentment. 7, she yells pivot, pivot at me, though not in a way that feels like it will be resolved after the commercial break. 8, we somehow muddle through it. 9, repeat as needed. After lots of shouting and about 4 dozen attempts at aligning the stump and the stand, our floor soaking with water and sticky with sap and covered in a festive dusting of pine needles, our tree was set and sat in the window. We were exhausted and slightly resentful and sticky, but hey, we'd done it. We Christmased. I let her lead me through the delicate process of decorating the tree, her wrapping and rewrapping and wrapping and rewrapping and wrapping and rewrapping the lights a good 3 dozen times to make sure it was just right. It was no multi-story Saguenay monstrosity, but it was a beaut. When it was done, we basked in the homey glow and watched It's a Wonderful Life, a film I had not yet seen. I was not prepared for how much it would make me cry or how strong of opinions I'd have about Uncle Billy. Fuck Uncle Billy. So we have the tree, and it stands proudly in the window, emanating onto the drunks coming out of the questionably legal sports bar across the street. We host family dinners throughout the month for an array of real family and chosen family, serving beef tenderloin and roasted root vegetables and Ina Garten realness, feeling that sweet hit of admiration every time they walked in and saw the tree and oohed and awed. What I came to understand from this experience is that Christmas is just about getting other people to admire your shit. And then, finally, the second weekend in January, we resolved that the tree had to come down. We repeated steps 1 through 9. My wife missed a step and sprained her foot. We left a trail of dry needles through the hallway, turning it into a chaotic opening scene from a crime procedural about cops who investigate tree kidnappings. We somehow managed to stuff the tree into the Civic through the trunk and drive it over to Portage Park just as the park was getting ready to close. And there it went, onto the pile of trees in similar states, left to sit in that empty Park District parking lot, joining its brethren in the afterlife that is becoming mulch. My first, and probably last, real Christmas tree, leaving me to wonder if participating in this celebration had been worth the shedding and the sap and my wife's injury. Next year, she said, we're getting a fake one. Thank you.
Jasmine Davila has appeared in venues small and medium-sized, reading in live lit shows like Essay Fiesta, The Skewer, and Tuesday Funk. You can find her on Instagram and Twitter at Jasmine D. Give it up for Jasmine.
Thank you. I'm going to bring this up a little bit, just a little bit. Okay. So I know there are all these new television shows that I, as a woman of the 21st century, should be watching. I feel like I'm supposed to have definite opinions on Veep and Killing Eve and any number of shows about difficult white women. But all I ever like to do is watch RuPaul's Drag Race, 90 Day Fiancé, and old episodes of Sex and the City. Do you remember that show? It's the one about four ladies terrorizing the island of Manhattan with their questionable taste in men, fashion, and cocktails. It's the show that introduced viewers of premium cable television to the concept of designer cupcakes and the idea that a guy could just not be that into you. I like to tell people that I only watched Sex and the City because it made me nostalgic for New York, the city where my parents raised me from the age of 8 onwards. But it couldn't have been homesickness, for this wasn't a New York that I recognized as the one that I had lived in. These ladies didn't look like they knew how to take the subway or knew what a knish from a hot dog cart actually tasted like. I watched it because occasionally I laughed, but mostly because I looked for signs of a New York that was familiar. Like, would the four ladies at long last encounter an Asian person who wasn't doing their nails? Or answering the phone at Miranda's neighborhood Chinese place or picking up after one of Samantha's elderly lovers? Would the ladies ever encounter a brown person and not resort to using slang to sort of show how down they were? So I'm not actually here to tell you why this show is garbage. It is not my intention to make you feel bad for watching it yourselves. I am here only to admit that I happily watched this garbage because it was something I did when I was in my 20s and regularly did things like smoke pot and eat ice cream for dinner. I liked laughing at clueless fancy ladies with unrealistically nice and big apartments and jobs that never seemed to demand they be anywhere or do anything while complaining about how they all had it really bad. I took many, many personality quizzes that informed me that I tended to veer between Miranda, who was boring to me, and Carrie, who I thought was gross. I learned to fake an appreciation for Cosmopolitans, which my friend Barry made for our weekly watch parties. I made a pilgrimage to Magnolia Bakery on a trip to New York to see my family because I was eager to sample their infamous cupcakes. I only learned, though, that their cupcakes are very dry and heavy. They looked far better than they actually tasted, and if you're going to spend that much money on dessert, you're better off getting the banana pudding. It was a given that in our group of friends who gathered every week to watch the show that Barry was a Samantha. He was the Samantha because he had blonde hair, favored brightly colored clothes that hugged his body, and slept with a lot of dudes. Our host, Brendan, was the Miranda, and I, because I had a blog and naturally curly hair and whined a lot, was the Carrie. My blog was personal and about my life and occasionally about my friends' lives, but always stopping short of the bedroom because I wasn't about to interrogate them for details. And there was nothing going on in my bedroom, or rather, there was nobody going into my bedroom. If not for the absence of company in the bedroom, however, I could have been the Samantha and not Barry, because I'm really good at puns, or really bad, depending on how you feel about them. I love talking about sex, or at least listening to other people talking about sex. And while I wasn't having sex, I was always having orgasms. Now, I don't know what's considered the normal or average number of orgasms for a woman in her 20s or her 30s or her 40s to have, but I'm pretty sure I exceeded it because I just masturbated all the time. And I masturbated, you know, for any number of reasons. I masturbated because I was bored and I was always bored. I masturbated when I was hungry and I was always hungry. I masturbated because I didn't feel like getting out of bed or because I couldn't face the misery of being an adult without having an orgasm first. I did it to put myself to bed, to relieve stress, to express anger and frustration, to solve problems, to answer questions. I did it because I could always come. I'm really good at coming. And like Samantha, even if it wasn't going so great at first, I could be counted on to change course, improvise a solution that in the end I could have an orgasm, whereas lesser mere mortal women might have faltered and given up. Now, on Sex and the City, there were two occasions where Samantha just, you know, couldn't. She just lost her mojo. The first time, she'd actually lost her orgasm in the same episode where Miranda's mother died. Now, I don't think the two had anything to do with each other, and in terms of how we deal with losses of a personal nature, it's pointless to try to compare them. It's the kind of ridiculous bordering on insulting plotline that Samantha always seemed to get stuck with, but Kim Cattrall, the actress who portrayed Samantha throughout 6 seasons of television and 2 truly terrible movies, raised the stakes with a really wonderful performance. And she actually got to say the line, "Charlotte, I'm masturbating. I told you I'd be doing that all day." And I, as a frequent masturbator, looked forward to the day when I would get to tell one of my friends the exact same thing. But then I forgot about sort of like my likening or sort of like my fondness for Samantha until about a few months ago when I found this, you know, rather a doctor found a tiny lump in my right breast that actually turned out to be cancer. I had known people with cancer before, but I still needed examples of what it was really like. Because all I had in my head were friends suffering with dignity, their parents and spouses and children and colleagues extolling their bravery throughout their ordeals. It seemed that I was surrounded by survivors who did not immediately take to social media to say, "What the fuck, dudes, I have cancer," which is what I did because I don't do anything with any kind of dignity. Because I'm not brave and I'm not strong and I'm certainly not a survivor. What I was tired. I slept all the time. I ate nothing but casseroles. I put on weight because I was eating nothing but casseroles. My surgeries and treatment coincided with autumn and fall. The seasons, falling temperatures, giving me yet another reason to stay indoors, lie in the dark, and indulge in my favorite activity. Except I was too tired to do that. I mean, I could barely bring to rest my very expensive Swedish vibrator upon my pubic mound, let alone summon the manual and digital dexterity to bring it on the old-fashioned way. I wanted the surge of strength that comes with coming, but I was so exhausted I could barely undress after coming home from the hospital every night. I'd just roll over in bed, snuggle into one of the body pillows I'd gotten to sort of help with some lower back pain, and then all of a sudden I'd be sputtering awake at 2 o'clock in the morning. The lights would still be on. TV turned to a creepy infomercial on WGN, and my fingers sadly stiff and pathetically unmoistened. I thought at least I don't have a boyfriend or a husband who's suffering with me through this, because that's what happened on Sex and the City when Samantha got breast cancer. She did chemo, so she lost her hair. She wore a lot of wigs and went through early menopause and felt bad she couldn't get herself to sleep with her incredibly handsome, sexy younger boyfriend. Because why should he have gone because of something that was happening to her? But he was patient and kind and loving, so he cheerfully ignored her when she asked him to sleep with other people while the two of them waited for the return of her sex drive. People remember at the end of the show that Carrie and Big got back together, he having rescued her from the mean Russian artist who slapped her in Paris. Miranda and Steve were looking after their family in Brownstone, Brooklyn, and Charlotte and Harry were renting their Park Avenue apartment for the arrival of their adopted daughter from China. Samantha's parting shot, her happy ending, was her sitting naked astride her handsome boyfriend, who had traveled all night from a Canadian film shoot to tell her that he loved her. He had sent her a pot of crocus bulbs that would open when it came time. And that's what I wanted, and I wanted to roll my eyes like that when I saw it, because it's cheesy and it's corny, it's kind of, you know, gratuitous, but it's also what I wanted. A pot of flowers, the inevitability of spring, and of course a very handsome man lying between my naked thighs. But all of those things, as well as more importantly, the promise that something I seem to have lost so easily will just as easily come back to me. Thank you.
Next up, we have Jess White, who obtained an MFA from the University of Wyoming. That's it. No, I'm just kidding. Since then, Jess has worked in Chicago as a writer. Their publication credits include Al Jazeera and The Toast, RIP, and most recently, an essay, Whiteboard, in the collection The Legacies of Matthew Shepard 20 Years Later. Give it up for Jess White.
Sorry, I'm terrible at these. So I have an apology to make. I ate an entire raw pineapple by myself last night. And as of this morning, I have this really angry, really painful canker sore, like right here, like right just up against my molar. And I like self-diagnosed by Googling mouth sore when to go to the ER. And it's like right on the cusp between... Yes, thank you. Okay, so anyway, it's like right on the cusp between you're fine, you'll be fine, just, you know, gargle with baking soda and warm water, and like you're dying of septicemia, and you'll know you're close to the end when your fingers fall off. So anyway, that probably won't happen for a couple of days, but in the meantime, I bought this topical numbing agent and just kind of swabbed it all around in there, and now my mouth is really numb. I mean, I don't know what I was expecting, but anyway, so if I sound a little bit weird, that's why. It's the pineapple. Anyway, this piece is called Mimi. And now that I'm standing up here, I'm realizing that I should definitely have called it Screaming Mimis. So the revised title of this piece is Screaming Mimis. Final technical adjustment. Okay. When I lived in Cambodia, I taught every morning at 7 o'clock. The school where I taught was located in the Stung Min Che neighborhood. My students were children from families who made their living as trash pickers, and the neighborhood had grown up around the Stung Min Che dump. My apartment was in the cheaper expat neighborhood on the northwest side of town, an hour by tuk-tuk away from the school. Tuk-tuks are local moto taxis, metal carts spot-welded to motorcycles, so named because the original tuk-tuks were tractors attached to old passenger buses. And when you use a tractor to haul a passenger bus full of people, it makes this harsh, grinding, stuttering noise. Tuk, tuk, tuk. There was a glut of tuk-tuks on the road that year, so tuk-tuk drivers would cluster on street corners and hail passengers. To get to school on time, I had to get into the tuk-tuk at 5:45. That morning, I got my period just as I was leaving the house. I'm a hearty bleeder. I've been using the Ultra Super Max Plus tampons since middle school. The purple ones. The ones that are shaped like mini kegs. Like the width of a thumb after you hit it with a hammer. You molded cotton pork knuckles. And tampons are not as common in Cambodia. And when I taught there, the only place you could buy tampons in Phnom Penh was at the expat supermarket on the main street, which was on the northeast side of town and closed until 10. $20 for a 20-pack of OB. I needed a stopgap, so I decided to look for a store that sold sanitary pads. The local brand were called Mimi's. The sun was rising as we sped down the north-south road towards the National Monument in the city center. Most of the stores were still closed, and mounds of laundry soap suds were drifting down the black canals as we crossed the bridge into Stung Min Che. Finally, I saw a corner market that was open. I called to the driver to stop, jumped out, and ran inside to greet the elderly woman behind the counter. There were Mimis stacked just above her head. I pointed at them, saying, "Mimi, Mimi," I couldn't remember the word for please. So I nodded and smiled. She handed me a packet, and I handed over a dollar, stuffed them into my bag so the driver couldn't see, and ran for the tuk-tuk. I got to class minutes before 7. The students were still washing their bowls out behind the patio cafeteria, and I had just enough time to duck into the bathroom, pull down my shorts, extract and unwrap a single flimsy Mimi, and carefully stick it to the inside seam of my underwear. The lesson was, who are the people in my family? I wrote the first sentences on the board and started coaching the students through a couple of practice exercises. I have two sisters. I have one little brother. In my family are three sisters and one brother and me. And then I felt it. A tingle on the inside of my underwear. A light trailing motion along my short hairs like the head lice I'd fought with all year. It intensified like carbonated water, like the bubbles in a jacuzzi, or the fingernails of a dog down there. These were the small children, the ones under 10. Lots of songs and simple speaking exercises. Ordinarily, these were the easy lessons, pictures with labels, questions and answers, quick back and forth. But that meant that I couldn't assign them an essay and run out of the room. And by this point, my crotch was burning and stinging. I was starting to sweat between my legs and on my face. I was always sweating in Cambodia. I would sweat like a pint glass all day long, and the ladies in the office would bring me glasses of water and wads of paper towels for your face. But it was winter in Cambodia, late November, and the temperatures dropped as low as 60 degrees. The air, to me, felt mild and spring-like. I was starting to hyperventilate. I had to escape. The children were singing, "Who are the people in your family?" They loved songs. We had this one volunteer, Rosalind. She was this older lady. And I was like, you know, Rosalind. She has gray hair. She wears a tie-dyed shirt. She always wears, like, fanny pack. And they were like, and then I was like, Mickey Mouse? And they were like, oh, Mickey Mouse, M-I-C-K-E-Y. Anyway, they were singing, and I didn't know why my crotch was on fire. I didn't blame the memes. They were just innocent cotton. Was it a different detergent in the laundry? Had some harsh chemical spilled on the package as it sat on the shelf? Had I touched something caustic on the way to the bathroom? Was I sick? I had to teach for an hour and 45 minutes before I could take my first break, and I wasn't going to make it. There were black spots in my vision. I was going to jackknife onto the floor. And so finally, I had an idea. Essays were out of the question. We already did writing letters the week before when I had food poisoning. The kids were too young to write actual paragraphs, so they would write the salutation and then just all the English sentences they knew. Dear brother, hello. How are you? I am 7. I like mango. I like kick the ball. So no letters. But they could draw pictures. And to draw pictures, they had to have markers. And the markers were in the office supply closet upstairs where there was a bathroom. I could investigate. I announced that we were going to draw pictures and called out to the cook on the patio that I was stepping out of the classroom for 1 minute. And then I ran up the stairs. The office was empty. The staff toilet was unoccupied. I shut the door and pulled down my shorts with shaking hands. The insides of my thighs were pink and swollen. I pulled down my underwear and my privates were, they were like minute steak. The air hurt. And the Mimi, of course, had immediately rolled itself into a tight cigarette, like Virginia Slim, like string. But I had no time. I splashed some water on my crotch and sponged it off with toilet paper, trying to sop up as much blood as possible. I couldn't put my underwear back on. I'd have to go to commando. Unshielded. Unstaunched. I wrapped the panties in toilet paper and hid them under the sink and emerged from the bathroom. The bins of markers were on top of the supply cabinet. The printer paper, carefully rationed for emergencies like this, was on top of the printer. I grabbed a thick sheaf. I came back downstairs on shaking legs and handed out markers and paper, asking the kids, like I'd planned it all along, to please draw a picture of all of the people in their family, including your grandmother and grandfather and your aunts and your uncles and your cousins, labeled with who they were and their names and their ages. And then we would stand up in front of the class and tell about your family. And then I sat on the edge of my desk, squeezing my legs carefully together. My crotch was still throbbing with pain, but it was less acute. It was bearable. I could wait out the next hour and then investigate. I would survive. At break, I checked the packet. No stains. Everything smelled clean and normal. Very clean. Fresh, in fact. Had they been stored next to the toothpaste? And then I saw it. On the package, under the pink Mimi logo, a discreet mint green swirl and a spray of snowflakes next to a word in Thai that I recognized. These Mimis were mentholated. They were designed to make me feel minty fresh all day. That afternoon at the expat supermarket, I spent $80 on 4 packs of Jumbo Ultra Plus tampons, OB brand, the 20 packs, and $15 on a tube of hydrocortisone, and $3 on a bag of ice. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Our last performer of the night. The product of 9 years in San Francisco and 8 years in St. Paul, Rosamund Lannan is pleasantly surprised to have lived in Chicago for over a decade. During that time, she has been published by internet periodicals, performed stories around the city, and consumed many carne asada burritos. These days, she's pretty into speculative fiction, co-hosting Misspoken, and trying to write essays that make you feel things, or at the very least, laugh.
It was a hot and steamy night, the kind of Minnesota summer evening that falls over August like a curtain, making everything slow and endless. It had just rained, and the lawns of St. Paul shone emerald through the window of my boyfriend's Prius. As we drove up the street, Isaac made a left instead of a right. My pulse quickened. I knew what that meant. That left turn was the express lane to Makeout City. His Prius was our pleasure palace. Because we lived with our parents. I was 15 and he was 20, and I thought he was very cool. I'd met him through my role-playing group, where we ran around college campuses with toilet paper tube swords, pretending we were vampires. Isaac worked at Caribou Coffee and went to community college. He swore college was so intense, we'd have to take a break for a few months when I graduated. I wasn't so sure about that. College didn't scare me, but taking a break did. I liked school, but the idea of focusing on anything outside of our relationship made me anxious. I was not, shall we say, possessed of a high self-esteem at that particular point in my life. Isaac kept driving, past houses and apartment complexes and that one house with 12 dogs and so much Vikings decor they had to be getting kickbacks from the NFL. 27-year-old offensive tackle Corey Stringer had just died of heat stroke during practice, and that house had made handmade signs saying, "We miss you, Corey," blocking the windows. I tried not to let it kill the mood. We'd gone to dinner and the movies. I wasn't about to let a dead football player ruin the most romantic night of my life. Just before parking, we passed a couple making out against a car. Her white tank top glowed under the streetlight. His hands moved over spaghetti straps and tan skin, then down to grab her ass, round and curving and distressed and ripped denim. She pressed against him, and I wanted to be her, an attractive girl with a boy who liked her. And I felt like I was getting pretty close to that. We'd been doing a lot of making out lately. Kissing. Whoa. Oh, there we go. That's what we were doing. Touching. his hands under my shirt, my hands under his pants, which detached and became shorts, becoming what he called pants formers. I knew this because he told me every time he took them off. He pulled over. We groped in the darkness, and I found myself in a position just below the steering wheel. Ankles twisted awkwardly around the gas and brake. It was uncomfortable, but so was love. I was determined. I undid his pants, moved my head down, and he put his hand on my head. Wait. I heard the soft hiss of a CD sliding into the adapter. The music flowed from the speakers, an opening chorus that lived somewhere between church chants and techno. Was that Enigma? My chest swelled. He'd put on mood music, you guys. My face was obscured by the top half of his pants formers, but my eyes were cartoon hearts, vibrating with passion and rock bottom standards. He leaned back, and I realized that if we timed it right, we might be messing around during the French part of the song that sounded dirty, which would be super hot. And the promise of this was enough to ignore the turn signal digging into the back of my neck. I started to give him a blowjob, and I wasn't very good, probably because I'd never given anybody a blowjob before. Wait. Hang on. I didn't stop right away. I was too overcome by sensual chanting. No, really, wait. He was serious. This wasn't extended foreplay. He was, like, in actual pain. Probably because I had braces. I'd had them since eighth grade, and they were almost off, but in that kind of in-between weird period where the wires stuck out a lot at the end, when I opened wide and tried to deep throat like I'd heard that boys liked, that jutting wire jabbed him right in the dick. Running down the side of his shaft like a teeny version of the swords that hung on his bedroom wall. I poked the wire experimentally with my tongue. Well, this is going well, guys. I was definitely due for a trim. I wondered if I could move up my next orthodontist appointment. He sat up. I cleared my throat and tried to look alluring, perched between the gas pedal and the brake. Do you want me to stop? I'm getting them taken off, like, really soon. Really soon. I hadn't mastered oral sex, and I also hadn't mastered the art of not talking during awkward moments. I'm better at one of those things. No. Keep going. I stared up at him. My leg was slowly falling asleep. Are you sure? Yeah. Okay. I bent down again, but no matter how carefully I maneuvered around the metal jungle of bumps and brackets, that wire would not quit. Our push and pull continued for several unsuccessful minutes, and I wasn't sure if my eyes were watering from disappointment or the ache in my jaw. Songs and books and movies hadn't prepared me for all this. And after several minutes that felt like forever, he told me to stop. I sat up, sliding to the passenger seat and staring straight ahead. He turned off the music, and I rubbed the back of my neck. 2 months later, we had sex. His sheets smelled like sweatpants, and when I went to check my email on his laptop, I found 5 gigs of anime porn. 2 weeks after that, he dumped me. I cried for weeks, but got over it. And by the time I went to college, he was just a story that I told at parties. I am somehow still straight. I want to make, sometimes, like, I think about making a non-appropriative version of It Gets Better. And more accurately, you get better. You realize that making some dude come isn't the ultimate end goal. And you get better about mixing up love and lust. Or at the very least, you get better about mixing up braces and blowjobs.
Oh my goodness.
I heard someone say "ear," and you know what, sir or ma'am? I don't know what to tell you.
It's just what it is.
It is what it is. Yeah. I mean, I can't argue with you, but also, I don't know. Maybe you had your own ears when you were 14. All right. So that's our show. Please join us in thanking tonight's readers, Jillian Ebanks, Lindsay Ennett, Anjali Wakar, and Jess White. Let's give them all a hand.
We'd also like to thank the Gallery Cabaret and you, the audience, for being here.
Give yourselves a hand. You showed up tonight.
Woo! If you want to know more about the show, you can find us online at miss-spoken.com.
You can also listen to past shows on the Miss Spoken podcast. Just search for Miss Spoken on Stitcher or iTunes. So like we said earlier, we're here on the last Wednesday of the month, which means we will be back on Wednesday, April 24th. And the theme of that show is Petty. Have a good night.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. Visit miss-spoken.com for the occasional update, information on our next show, and how to get involved.